Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. Primary elections are just 3 weeks from today. And do you know who your candidate for controller is? Controller oversees a $60 billion budget and more than $80 billion in pension assets, but tends to operate way under the radar. We're going to try and correct a bit of that today with WNYC's Bob Henley and the Daily News' Aaron Einhorn. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Also, we'll take questions about the race for controller, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you want to know more about the candidates or if you know any one of the candidates and want to tell us what you know, we'd like to hear from you, 212-433-WNYC. Now, first, Bob, introduce us to the candidates. Who are they? Who's running? And what can you tell us about them?
Well, I think that you have John Liu, who is the first Asian American councilman. His head of high-profile head of the Transportation Committee has made a pretty good science of having Sunday and Saturday press conferences, raised his visibility on going after the MTA, has been recently in the Daily News, but we have the actual reporter there. We can talk about that later. And then we have Melinda Katz, who is an assemblywoman, came to prominence as being head of the Land Use Committee, where she had a reputation for, at least she says it, for balancing the interest of affordable housing up against development. Then we have David Yaski. All this entire field are council people. David Yaski has the distinction of being from Brooklyn. The other three are from Queens. David Yaski is a lawyer and has been a hardworking councilman, raised his profile on a lot of environmental issues and some accountability issues. And then we have David Weprin, who was the head of the City Council Finance Committee, comes from a long line of politicians. He himself has been, over the last two terms in the City Council, that person that was always at budget resolution time. It was either, Christine Quinn and Mayor Bloomberg and Weprin, trying to close the budget gap.
So because he was the head of the Finance Committee.
Exactly.
So they had their first debate this week. We heard it on WNYC on Sunday. By the way, the first mayoral primary debate between candidates Bill Thompson and Tony Avella is tomorrow night. And Brian Lehrer will be back tomorrow, and he will be one of the panelists, and it will be live on WNYC 7 to 8.
Well, there is a Republican. There is a Republican in the field, too, so we are fair. Joe Mandela, 47, for controller. He is, the chief compliance officer with Magnet Securities Corporation. So that we've been full time.
But the Democratic primary have some more time to talk about the race in November. But so they had their first debate. And what were some of the issues? You were there. What were some of the issues that came up?
Well, I wasn't really there. I was in the green room. We weren't allowed into the place where the debate happened. But suffice to say that it was pretty much of a ho-hum. Some of the there were a couple of moments where each candidate kind of distinguished themselves. I would say certainly David Yaski coming out against the hundreds of millions of dollars in city council discretionary funding jumped out at me because that was a departure.
And there's a clip of that. Let's listen to that clip right now.
I think the practice of allowing council members to distribute discretionary funds is a bad idea. It's too open to waste and abuse and even, as you allude to, criminality.
Yeah, that was quite something.
So explain that to us.
Well, historically, the city council, and this goes back long before the current speaker, had this practice of hundreds of millions of dollars that went to various nonprofits. Now, where the scandal came in is when the U.S. attorney started looking at allegations of misappropriation, where specifically two city council staffers had moved money out of one of these discretionary funds to some offshore account to benefit relatives. And that sent into, a whole slide of investigation. And then looking at this long-term process of using so-called placeholders where they weren't even real names of organizations. Christine Quinn, the speaker, inherited this situation, tried to turn around with compliance, but still, we had another councilman, Martinez, just recently plead out. It really opened up a whole world. And then we found out even about mayor discretionary funds. So, Yasky really did make a break with the pastor in the status quo on that. Now,
because the controller has always had the ability to oversee these funds.
If it's city funds, he could audit it.
Traditionally, and we all know that when it comes to politics, politicians tend to sort of not look too closely at each other's pots of money, especially when you may want people's support in an upcoming election. And that's just not the current occupant of the office. That's probably the whole history of the controller's office.
Right. We still don't even know.
So Yasky is saying, I would break from the past. I would take away these pots of money.
And he couldn't take it away. In point of fact, we have to be clear that a lot of these things that people are talking about are things they might want to do. I mean, we heard David Weprin talk about one of the big problems we have is at least a $5 to $6 billion budget gap ahead next year. And he was talking about taxing commuters, which is something he couldn't do of his own right. But
let's hear that clip now.
I think the answer really here is to bring back the old commuter tax. When we had a commuter tax, people that spent their day in New York City benefited from services, whether it be police, fire, transportation, sanitation. They should all pay a fair share.
So the commuter tax is an interesting issue to push for, especially from, you know, David Weprin from Queens, who, you know, some people in Queens identify themselves as commuters, although they wouldn't necessarily be subject to this tax. We're talking about people from outside New York City who work in New York City who used to be subject to a tax.
My father paid it for years and never complained.
Well, no one noticed it because
exactly.
It was, you know, 45 cents.
And as things get, the options get, there's less options now as we head into this prolonged period of time of downturn. I mean, we still have these foreclosure issues, we have record unemployment. So it's not bouncing back right away. They're going to have to be looking for different revenue sources. So it gives you more a sense of the sensitivity of the controller. Now, in the case of Councilwoman Katz, she, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about how the current occupant of the office of the controller, Bill Thompson, relied on private equity managers. And the Times did this major story that said that the stock, that the pension fund underperformed, and yet they increased the use of these pension managers. Well, Katz says, well, let's go back and get the fees that these underperforming money managers got paid from the city.
And let's hear Melinda Katz.
I would start in going back to those companies and saying to those companies, you want to continue investing from our city? You want to make sure that you continue with your funds to get our money? Where are the fees that you got from the city of New York? Give them back, and then we can continue negotiations.
So she's saying she's going to get tough on these management companies.
Well, I don't know how you're exactly going to do that, but it sets a tone. The idea is that she's going to roll up her sleeves and face off against the moneyed interests. And in a race where you're going to see so
Although,
few voters turn out.
Interestingly, I mean, you know, one of the major criticisms of Melinda Katz in her role as a city council person and head of the Land Use Committee is that she's, in fact, not done that. You know, she says, you know, she's represented the best interests of the cities, but as the head of the Land Use Committee, there's been some criticism that she hasn't had enough of an arm's length.
In fact, the Times referred to this in an endorsement of David Yasky about her proximity to real estate interests.
All right, let's listen to a clip from John Liu, and then let's bring in Aaron Einhorn to talk about her story that she did. Here's Liu at Sunday's debate.
Finally, the comptroller has a say in the single largest budget item in our city's budget. I will use the audit powers to review the contracts, particularly the no-bid contracts, with an eye towards saving millions of dollars for the schools, for the classrooms.
So what is John Liu talking
about
there? Well,
that's actually a kind of breakthrough, where in Albany, one of the things that did come through with their iteration of mayoral control was the role of having the controller oversee the Department of Education, which has been a parallel fiscal universe. Even though it's over $20 billion, it kind of audits itself. So the next controller, whoever, you know, wins this election, is going to have the opportunity to roll their sleeves up. Of particular focus is some $2 billion in non-bid contracts that DOE has had that have been quite controversial.
All right. Let's talk about John Liu. He has been in the news, in the daily news, specifically.
Daily.
daily in the daily news. It's true. Aaron Einhorn, you wrote a story about John Liu's claim in his television commercial, and, you know, we've seen him talk about it out on the trail also, that he worked in a sweatshop as a child. What did you find out?
Well, John Liu has these very powerful emotional ads on the TV right now that it has these images of women hunched over machines and a crowded factory, and it says, you know, John Liu came to this country at 5 years old, and at seven he had to go to work in a sweatshop. And it is a dramatic story. I went to talk to his parents last week, actually, for a profile I wanted to do about him. You know, it's a standard thing where you go and you interview the family and people who knew him. And I asked the mother about her work experience, because his story is that he worked – his mother had to bring him to the sweatshop where she worked, and he was put to work. And I asked her, you know, what, you know, how, where did you work? What was it like? And she said that she never worked in a factory. I said, what do you mean you never worked in a factory? She said, well, I had three children at home. I would go to the factory and bring home piecework, and I worked at home. And I said, you sure you never worked in the factory? You know, did your son work with you in the factory? And she said, well, he would help me at home, and I would pay him 25 cents for every ball of yarn that he spun on a yarn spinning tool. And John Liu's father was there, too. And he told the same story. He said the 25 cents was an allowance. And so you have these two parents. And I went back to Liu and I said, what's going on with this? I mean, you have the story and your parents are contradicting it. And he said, well, they're ashamed of it. And I said, well, show me somebody, you know, some more evidence. And we went to one of his mother's friends, and she told the same story, that Mrs. Liu had to work at home. And then they gave me more names, more witnesses, same story over and over again. And so I did this. I wrote this in the Daily News on Sunday, that this story that is really a cornerstone of his campaign, there's certainly a lot of people who don't believe that it's true, including his own parents.
Well, it's a cornerstone of his campaign because it suggests that he really came. I mean, it's a very sort of powerful immigrant story. He came from nothing and is now someone who is running for one of the most powerful offices in the city, if not the state. But he's still pushing back. I mean, he says parents don't talk about this because it's shameful. And they don't want to say, I brought my child to the factory. And he says that's what's happening here, that sort of, you know, a family drama has come to light, and that his parents don't really want to say what happened.
He does say that, and he stands by his story. But, in fact, his story has changed. So yesterday he said, well, you know, in fact, my mother did work at home most of the time, which is not what he says, or at least strongly implies in his TV ads. This is a story that he never told before this year. He was the first Asian American elected to council. There were a lot of biographical stories written about him in 2001. He has told his story. And this sweatshop story, specifically the story of him working in the sweatshop with his mother, is a 2009 story.
In fact, Bob Henley, is the sweatshop story a way of him his saying, I'm an Asian American candidate, I'm the only Asian American candidate running for citywide office, without explicitly saying
What's interesting, though, is I just got off the phone with him before, and he says that apparently his mother's going to appear at an event today, and I guess the family will be in a public circumstance where people can cross-examine them. Running for citywide office, it does create a certain narrative. I mean, at this point, you have to wonder what exactly is going on here. There is something, when your family goes through hardship economically, there is something that happens between generations about euphemizing it and making it better than it was. But clearly the questions about, you know, these material differences, you know, kind of go beyond that. So you got to wonder. And it comes at a time where it is true, it was not, from my understanding, it was not in his city council profiles when he was running for city council office.
And I should also say that John Liu was present during one of the interviews I did with his mother. And his mother, I had told him what his mother had said to me. And then he said, well, let's go talk to my mother again. And the two of us go together to talk to his mother. And I asked her again, where did you work? She said, I worked at home. And she kept looking at her son for the right answer. And he, to his enormous credit, he said, Mom, don't look at me. Just tell her what you remember. Don't worry. Just tell her what you remember. And the mother told the same story, the same details that her friends told. And her story was consistent.
And there's no issue of a language barrier here. His mother speaks English?
His mother's been in this country since the early 1970s. She struggles with English, but she was confident in the way she spoke. There were some times where I had to repeat questions in order to help her understand better. But I felt very confident that she understood what she was saying and seemed very confused when her son was present, because she wanted to say the right thing. And seemed confused that it didn't seem to be the right answer.
Our guests are Aaron Einhorn of the Daily News and Bob Henley of WNYC, and we're talking about the race for city controller, very, very powerful position. And if you are a Democratic primary voter in New York City, you will be deciding on this just 3 weeks from today. Let's take some questions from callers. Bob from Marine Park, Brooklyn. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Good morning, everyone. Yeah, I couldn't care less about the sweatshop issue. May I ask a question now about the uniform services and the cost? I met three of the candidates, except for John Liu, at Lou Fiddler's office 4 months ago. It was get to meet the public. And I raised something with David Yasky, and he ducked a question. First of all, I asked him about the reports that three-quarters of the firefighters are retiring at three-quarters pension. I think he gave me a crummy answer. He said it had to do with 9/11. Also, if I may, many years ago, I was a civilian employee of the NYPD. I worked in a police station. And right now, you still have in my neighborhood police officers on the switchboards doing the clerical work in two precincts out here. And also, despite we all know the danger the police are in, the great valuable work they do, 90% of what the police do out on patrol in the police cars is paperwork.
It's Bob,
just taking
Bob,
reports.
I'm sorry, I'm losing the thread of the question here. What is it that Bob Hanley,
okay.
you know what Bob from Marine Park's asking?
I think it's a question of accountability of very powerful unions and longstanding pension arrangements. And as we come up against scarcity where we've had an underperforming market, which is what funds these pensions, there are going to have to be tough questions asked, even beyond the Tier 5, which is what the mayor favors, is the idea of a less generous pension plan. And the controller historically, I mean, at this moment, the person who gets this job is going to be getting it at one of the toughest times because of this huge budget gap. And they're going to have to get at some of the issues this caller talks about.
Let's take another call. Mimi from Rosedale. Hi, Mimi. You're on WNYC.
Hi. I just wanted to say that you act like you're doing some kind of newsbreaker on this sweatshop issue. If the man's mother had to come home and bring home piecework and incorporate her son into helping her with the work, that's a horrible life. I mean, it's really horrible to have to bring home work from a factory. I know. I did it, about 20 years ago myself while I was trying to go through school and that. It's no fun, and, to come off like, well, what's the difference, going to the factory or doing it at home? You know, it's not like you kick back and you can watch TV. You're bringing home sometimes, material that gets into your skin. It's a horrible issue, and like the first man said, it shouldn't even be an issue anyway. It should be his ability to do things.
Mimi, do you think, though, is there anything to his sort of, not being specific about this that troubles you?
You know what? The guy is basically a politician, and I don't really think any politician is going to do anything but stretch the truth and do these things. Because once you vote for a politician, you elect a politician, and I really would like for you as, a person within the media to really bring up the real issues. Out here in Rosedale, I don't even have a real police real police station. There's a part-time police station. Literally, it's part-time. And after a certain time, they close up the station. After a certain hour, and they leave.
All right, those are
issues.
Thanks for your call, Mimi. Let's get a response from Erin Einhorn of the Daily News.
I think you actually bring up an excellent point about bringing home piecework is, in fact, a very difficult thing to do. And in fact, John Liu's family story is a very dramatic story about coming to this country. And his father became president of a bank, worked his way up in a bank, became president of a bank. And it's a great story. Liu went to the best, went to the Bronx High School of Science. He's an actuary. He's got this great financial background. And his story on its own was a great story. And yet he's saying he worked in a sweatshop. And on the campaign trail, he says, I know what it means to work in a sweatshop. I know, it's so hot in there. And he's describing it so vividly. And yet the details of the story he's telling is in conflict with the details that some of the people who knew him when he was a child were telling.
I think also that in your reporting now, and he confirmed it, there was also a tremendous reversal where his father was, I guess, indicted and convicted related to a bank fraud case. And that kind of reversal to come out and achieve, as John Liu has, is amazing. It's that typical American success story. I think there is something deeper here, though, about how older people want to remember hardship and how their children remember it. And the idea of the home front being focused around this piecework where you have a kind of a Mikio door at home is its own form of oppression. And I see your point as well taken that it seems that he's dramatized it. But clearly he had a childhood of struggle. That's what I mean. From taking even from your account, having your father convicted and falling from prominence and then having your mother take piecework home.
No, his father was convicted of bank fraud in 2001. Actually, when John Lewis was running for city council, he was an adult at that point. His father had come to this country, was sent here by the Bank of Taiwan to get an MBA or a financial education by the bank. And when the when his father decided to stay in New York, he had to sever ties with the Bank of Taiwan. And John Liu says that he had to become a low-level bank clerk, which is why his mother had to go to work in the garment factory. Of course, I have a story in today's Daily News. I found a document, actually, that was an exhibit in his father's trial. That indicates that the father was, in fact, an international officer in the bank, in a Japanese bank in 1972.
Wow.
And Liu went to, says he went to work in the sweatshop in 1974 until 1978. Now, this family, he's painting this image of this struggling immigrant family, and there are so many of those, especially in New York. It is this tale of struggle. But this is a family that bought a split-level house with a two-car garage in Bayside in 1977. So a year before John Liu says he left the sweatshop, they got a $58,000 mortgage, which is, you know,
a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
All right. We need to wrap up this segment. Bob Hanley, what is the path to victory in a nutshell for each of these candidates?
I guess to avoid the Daily News. No, I think that they have to remember, we're talking about less than one in four voters turning out for this race. So it has to be something where they mobilize and stand out in the field in a way that people who normally wouldn't vote say, okay, the top of the ticket, you know, they have the race between Avella and Thompson for mayor. Oh, I'm going to be really motivated to turn out for controller. So they really have to get through to people in a core way.
And, of course, you know, there's all different kinds of ways of looking at this. Melinda Katz is the only woman running for any office, any citywide office in the Democratic primary. David Yasky is the only one from Brooklyn. He just got the endorsement of the New York Times. John Liu, of course, the only Asian American in office in the city of New York.
Supported by Sharpton.
Now running for higher office, Working Families Party. So all of them certainly have their own constituencies. It'll be a hard-fought, interesting race. Thanks so much to both of you for keeping us up to date.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll talk about more international banking with Carrick Mollenkamp of The Wall Street Journal. We'll be discussing UBS and the Swiss bank settlement.